Reality Daily listeners, what's happening? This is your boy JB here. We are talking all things Traitors USA, episodes 1 through 3 that premiered just over the weekend. And we've got a full Traitors turret here today. We've got 3 of Reality Daily's finest here to talk the Traitors USA premiere. We've got my boy from the challenge. It's Naveed. Naveed, what's going on?
Doing good, JB, and similar to Dan in roundtables, it's hard for me to get a word in when it comes to these podcasts.
Well, you're going to be battling with some other traders here today. We've got the OG, Mr. Wyatt. Wyatt, what's up?
Yeah, I've been so geeked about this season. I really feel like they did such a great job with casting, at least on paper. So far, so good, I would say, as well.
Absolutely, and couldn't be a full Traitors turret without Nsakan. Nsakan, what were your quick thoughts on the premiere?
Loved it. Loved the cast. Really excited for how this season is going to go. It's going to be a really traitorous and backstabby season.
Absolutely. I think I can speak for all 4 of us when this cast was being leaked on social media back in, I think it was like September or October, we were all pretty excited. This is like a reality TV wet dream, as I like to call it. And to have them all in such a unique format is really cool. Obviously, this is the second season, so we know a little bit more what to expect. So we're not going to talk too much about the format and such. But if you're wanting to get more information about it, go watch the show and then come back to this, because we're going to be talking more about what happened in these shows. This doesn't necessarily, this shouldn't be like a replacement for watching the episodes, but more commentary adding on to what we saw. So obviously our cast, I'm just going to go through a quick little run through, chop run through of who our cast is before we kind of talk about this episode, these first 3 episodes. They dropped 3 episodes with us for the first week, and then each week from now it'll just be 1 episode until our finale, which is in early March, I believe. So going in alphabetical order by last name, we have John Burkow, who's a former member of Parliament, reality TV rookie, but there aren't too many of those on this cast. We have Bergie from Love Island USA, Trishelle from The Real World and The Challenge fame, Max from Dancing with the Stars, Ekin Su from Love Island UK, a personal favorite of mine, if I do say so myself. We got Johnny Bananas from The Real World Challenge fame, and of course, the runner-up from The House of Villains Season 1. Can't do this season without the Queen of Survivor, Sandra, and the King of Big Brother, Dan. We have MJ from Shaws of Sunset, Marcus Jordan, the son of Michael Jordan, and his girlfriend, Larsa Pippen of Real Housewives fame. Tamra, also from The Real Housewives of Orange County. Kevin from Bling Empire, one of the few that I don't think very many of us are familiar with on the cast, also didn't have a whole lot of screen time in the first couple of episodes. We have Phaedra from The Real Housewives of Atlanta and Married to Medicine on Bravo. Peppermint from RuPaul's Drag Race. Janelle from Big Brother. And we've got Parvati from Survivor. That should be really interesting to see Parvati and Sandra there together. CT from The Real World and The Challenge fame. We're hoping to see a lot of CT and Bananas, but we didn't. Obviously, as we get into the episodes, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Pilot Pete from The Bachelor fame. Sheree from The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And Deontay Wilder, the other reality TV rookie in the cast. But he's a former heavyweight champion. So quite the bunch we have here. Wyatt, just one person in particular that you were extremely excited in particular in this cast.
So for me, I was really excited to see Ekin Su. I think this is probably a hot take, especially for the people that didn't see Love Island UK. But I actually think she may be the best casting on paper. I don't think that she's proven that yet, but just her track record on Love Island. She was so messy. And like when you talk about the people like Sandra and Parvati and Dan, the people that most people would say is like the people that they're the most excited for, those people have the potential to be like game body and potentially boring, you know, under the right circumstances. I can't imagine a world that Ekin Su would ever be boring. So for me, that's who I was most interested about.
Absolutely. I feel like Ekin Su, I was hoping, you know, for a traitor, but I'm happy that she's a faithful Either way, I think she was going to bring good TV. Naveed, same question to you. Floor is yours.
You know, I think you really put some disrespect on Marcus's name when you just said that he was Michael Jordan's son. Marcus Jordan is a UCF legend. He averaged a whole 8 points per game and totally dominated. And you know what? I was most excited to see him because, you know, the whole entire Larsa and Marcus, like, celebrity couple or whatever you want to call it, has been such like hot news the past few like weeks or year or whatever you want to say. So like I think it's just like really interesting to see like how they would have done this game. So I was very excited to see Marcus.
Definitely a lot there to unpack. Obviously, for those that are unfamiliar, Michael Jordan was the basically king of the NBA in the 1990s, and he had his Robin, Scottie Pippen, also an NBA Hall of Famer. But the funny part about it is Larsa is Scottie's ex-wife, and now he's dating, now she's dating Michael Jordan's son, who is a little bit younger than her. But at the same time, you know, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen were butting heads all throughout their career and even beyond it. So the fact that Michael's son is now dating Scottie's ex-wife, certainly a lot of drama there that unfortunately didn't necessarily play out on screen, as we'll talk about. But Ensikan, I want to get your opinion as well on this. What's one cast member in particular that you are excited about?
We are sleeping on Miss Phaedra Parks. I need to remind everyone that Phaedra literally got fired from The Real Housewives because she started some crazy rumor about Candy and her husband. And when she was called out at the reunion, rightfully so, her response was, oh, so I'm the villain now? Yes, bitch, you're the villain. You were always the villain. You were dead wrong the entire time. No remorse, no guilt, straight face the entire time. Phaedra is gold for this. This is literally where she's meant to be.
Yeah, and this is a good segue to go right into the traitor selection, because Phaedra is chosen as one of the two traitors. So, Ensikan, I'll go back to you. When you see Alan Cummings tap Phaedra's shoulder, she is the traitor. What are your thoughts?
I think Phaedra is going to make a really good traitor. I think this is really a position she's meant for. And I know Dan's already underestimating her, like, oh, she hasn't really done this kind of game. No, Dan, you don't understand what kind of menace you have as a teammate. She can do this with her eyes closed and be fine. She's going to kill people and not really give a damn. The only thing that might get in Phaedra's way that I'm worried about is some of her friends, mainly Sheree. But if she can get past that, I really think Phaedra is going to make an excellent traitor.
I'm going to say this. I think Phaedra has been the MVP so far of the season. I think she's given excellent confessionals. She's at least the confessional MVP of the season. And I think she's playing a really good job as the traitor so far. She really seems to have gone undetected so far, which is obviously the most important part about being a traitor. But she's been gold in TV as far as I'm concerned. Anyone want to push back on that idea or add on to it?
No, I think that she is definitely the MVP. This is not what I expected in terms of being the traitor. There's a couple of things that I was very confident in going into the season. And one of them is I was confident that if there was going to be a Bravo representation of the traitor, it would be Pippen, or it would be maybe Marcus Jordan, who's not Bravo, but you know what I'm saying. Like, it would be one of those two, because I just felt like that's why you cast the two people, is you want one of them to be the traitor and the other one not. No, I'm shocked that that was wrong. But I think they've made a great choice, especially just seeing both of these people in the confessionals. It is so clear that if you didn't know Phaedra before, and I was not as familiar with her game, that she is really the star here. And I certainly agree with your sentiment, Jeremy, that she is the MVP so far.
Yeah, and you've got Phaedra's fellow OG traitor, Mr. Dan Giesling, coming out of reality TV retirement. Naveed, I don't know about you. I was thinking that Dan would be a perfect traitor choice. Do you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. And I'm actually curious to know if, like, maybe that, like, that was the way they got him to come back, because they were like, if you come back, Dan, you know, you never know what could happen. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, you could be the traitor. So I'm really interested to see like what the conversations were there, but I agree 100%, JB. He's a total game bot, but you kind of enjoy seeing that on traders, especially like a game bot who can kind of own like the evil tactics that they're like deploying. And Dan is like very good at that. So it's exciting to see what happens there, but this is like 10 years after his, like the last time he's played, and he's kind of embraced nowadays like his more nerdy side, like on YouTube, on Twitch. Like he's constantly streaming and you know, uploading like these gaming videos. He plays with like other YouTubers, so it's gonna be interesting to see if he still has it.
Yeah, you know, Dan, like when I looked at the cast for the first time, my first thought was Dan has to be the traitor, just because he is known, for those that are unaware of his Big Brother run, he is most known for pulling off big stunts and getting away with a lot of, you know, crazy shit. And that's what the traitors is about. You know, a good traitor can pull off some crazy moves to win the game. And Dan, I think, is going to be a fantastic traitor. But we saw something that's a little bit different compared to season one. Obviously, in season one, we had our three traitors off the bat chosen. But Alan only taps two shoulders at the selection ceremony. And then it goes into the first night where Dan and Phaedra have to recruit another traitor. Wyatt, what are your thoughts about this element in the game?
So I love it. And there's a lot of overlap between this season of US and the current UK season that is airing. UK season did something very similar. They had three traders to start out with, and they got to select collectively a fourth trader. So I did think coming into this, they probably would have something like this where they would have to select somebody. And I mean, just to kind of go off what Naveed was saying with Dan, I didn't actually expect Dan to be the traitor. I should have. I feel kind of stupid not thinking about it now. But I thought maybe he'd be a little too close to the sun, like to get somebody that's such a reality TV legend in the sense of like, you know, Sarid basically dominated season one. And I thought whether it was Dan or Parvati or even Sandra, I just felt like that it was a little too close for comfort for them to choose that. I thought that you would have a situation where that person would immediately be pointing fingers at, and that wouldn't make the show particularly interesting. But I do feel pretty dumb about that now. But I do love the idea that they got to select somebody, because otherwise, if the production had to choose three people, I can't imagine that we see Dan making a selection or them taking two of these like Survivor Big Brother people as the actual traitors.
Yeah, I think you need some variety there for sure. But even after this traitor selection ceremony, there's a little bit of suspicion already going around, specifically with John Bercow. Apparently, John was like coughing or breathing heavily as the selection ceremony was coming to an end. And Janelle, who was sitting right next to him, called him out on it. And he's like, oh, I have asthma, which seemed a little fishy. What do you think, Insikan, of that moment?
I'm surprised he hasn't been banished yet, because that was incredibly fishy. Because it was really noticeable to the point where I thought he might be dying. I'm like, we need to check on this man. But for him to walk away from that, like it's gonna come back to him at some point. They're not gonna let this go, because that was wild. He needed to control that way better.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think it's a little hard to just flat out accuse someone right away in the first moment of the game actually starting. I didn't really look to. I would never do that. I feel like that's just silly, stupid. Maybe it's just the excitement of the game starting and you want to, like, you know, point fingers right away. There's another person, too. I forget who it was off the top of my head. I'd have to look back at it. Maybe one of y'all remember. But someone was quick to accuse Parvati of being a traitor right away. It was whoever was sitting next to her at the ceremony. Do y'all remember who that was that tried calling Parvati out?
Wasn't it MJ?
It's Larsa. Yeah, it's Larsa.
Yeah, it might have been Larsa, yeah. So Larsa calls out Parvati because, like, she thinks that Alan's movement, or movement of a shoulder or something. I don't know. To me, that was a little less fishy. And obviously Parvati, you know, wasn't tapped, and neither was John. So all of these theories are completely false. And, you know, when you only have two traders out of 21 starting players, you know, most of the theories are going to be wrong, but you might as well start to, like, you know, throw out some theories, I guess. I would just be maybe a little bit, you know, less subtle about, or a little bit more subtle about you know, all of these theories and maybe not throwing them out right away. But we're going to get to the first mission, which is a copy of the first mission in Traitors UK. And basically, they have to take all of these puzzle pieces. They're all tied up at the beginning on land, and they have to untie themselves from these poles. And then they have to go into the water, collect all these puzzle pieces, put them together, and then get back to land. But a new twist, or I guess a new wrinkle that's different from season one, is that instead of going to the armory, and you know, maybe the army will make an appearance this season, but we haven't seen it yet, but these shields are being offered in the middle of these missions. So it tests the players and what they want to do between, do I want to help the team get the money for the pot, or do I want to go get safety from the next murder? So it forces people to give that prisoner's dilemma of me versus we. But Janelle is all about me in that first mission. When she unties herself from the pole, she can go and help other people untie, but instead she runs over to the shield, grabs it, and she earns safety from the first murder. Naveed, would you do what Janelle did in that moment? Would you take that shield, or would you have helped the other people?
Yeah, I would have taken, especially if you're Janelle and like you have such a huge target on your back, I would have 100% taken the shield. And I love that she didn't even hesitate to run for the shield. It was such an iconic moment from her. I'm actually going to turn to Wyatt for this, for the next person who got the shield. Dude, CT legitimately like almost like flipped the boat over when he jumped out.
It was such a big guy boat, too. You know, if he was just riding with, like, Ekansu and John Burkow, like, he would have shot her to the moon, like, with his velocity. It was wild. But I tell you, I'm so surprised that you see two of the three people that take the shields this round are people that are so engulfed in reality TV lore that you would think they would understand that, like, listen, like, if you're going to get killed, like, off rip, like, if you're going to be the first person to get killed, like, your game's basically dead anyway. Like, the shield's not going to protect you for long, right? Like, you eventually will get got if they have that much of a hard-on to be able to get you out. So if you're Janelle or you're CT, I'm just surprised. This would be something that I would expect maybe somebody like a Bergie to do, who's maybe a little bit passive, or somebody like Kevin from Bling Empire, whose show is, like not even, like, any part strategic. That's who I expect. The people like CT and stuff, I think they would understand the importance of, like, gaining trust as a group.
Yeah, and Deontay Wilder is going to be the third person to get that shield. And Sakam, what were your thoughts about Deontay getting a shield? Do you think it was smart for him to do it? And do you agree with Naveed and Wyatt? Like, do you go and get that shield if you are one of these high-profile reality TV show contestants?
So for Deontay, it makes sense, right? Deontay hasn't done a reality show. He's new to all this. He's not familiar. He comes from a sport where you play by yourself. I don't blame Deontay for going for shield. And he's a bigger guy, right? Like, you kind of stand out like a sore thumb. If you're Deontay, you should go for a shield. I would also argue that if you're CT, you also probably should go for a shield as well. Just for the sole fact that CT's going to get murdered at some point, I imagine. I don't see CT getting banished. I see him getting murdered. So if you can delay your murder, you might as well delay it for as long as you can and start your game by building something. Janelle, I get her getting the shield. I don't get her running immediately while her group is still literally tied up and needs help. Because, you know, at some point they're going to start building this narrative against Janelle that she's selfish, right? This is the first run. Like, she left us tied up to go get a shield. And if she keeps doing things like this, they're going to start saying, you know what, she's selfish. And if she's selfish and she's faithful, why are we keeping her?
I'm going to be honest with y'all. I don't think I have exactly the same take as all of y'all. I think all three of these players were justified in going to get that shield. For Janelle, I think it makes a lot of sense because she was the first person to get out. And it was right there. So it wasn't like a super, and if Janelle didn't go and get it, someone was going to. And you don't, I mean, yes, and you can push that narrative onto someone, but, and also, at the same time, there is no round table before the first murder. So that is another thing, too. Like, if there was a round table before the first murder, people could have been like, oh, well, Janelle, you're a selfish, faithful, or you're a traitor. Regardless, you need to go. But there isn't in that point. And with there's being so much uncertainty before the first, like, at this point, when there's so little information in the game. I think getting the shield, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, especially considering who ended up getting murdered at the first murder. I think she was very well justified, especially CT as well. You know, I think that with CT, he's someone that, you know, if he gets a little bit further in the game and people can build drama in front of him that puts him in a back seat, and that's usually what he does, is he lets the other people, you know, build all these narratives and all this crazy drama that ends up getting them, you know, in elimination or in, you know, in the firing line, and he just kind of sits back and waits for his turn. And I think that's kind of what he's trying to do here, but he's trying to guarantee himself safety from the first one when he's the most vulnerable in the game, because he doesn't have all of these distractions in front of him that can ultimately get him murdered. Because if he did not have that shield, he definitely would have been a candidate for murder for sure. And then for Deontay, again, someone that is, you know, fairly new to a bunch of things, a bigger guy, could be seen as a big threat. I can totally see why he would go for that shield. Ultimately, we're not going to talk too much about these missions just because it really only affects the prize fund at the end. We will talk, you know, as the season goes on about these shields, because I do think that they are particularly interesting, especially with this first mission. They end up winning the mission. They get 30 grand for the pot. That's all cool. And now it's the end of the first full day of the game. Dan and Phaedra are going to meet in Traitor's Tower. I don't know why they switch the names in each franchise. It's Traitor's Tower. We'll call it that for continuity purposes.
JB's sick and tired of it.
Yeah, I'm tired of it. Tired of Traitor's Turret Tower. Like, it's Traitor's Tower for purposes of consistency. But Dan and Phaedra are going to be really surprised to see each other up in Traitor's Tower, because they have both been playing it very low key, and they are both kind of deciding who should be that third traitor. Guys, I'm gonna just leave it to y'all. Y'all are the traitors right now. Who are you recruiting to be your third traitor? Starting with Navid, who do you think?
Ooh, okay. Is this like in a world where we can't say Parvati, or are we allowed to say Parvati as well?
You're allowed to say Parvati. You're allowed to say any of these people. I'm asking you, if you're Dan and or Phaedra, who do you pick as your traitor?
I think if you're Dan, I think he made the right pick with Parvati, but I think if you're Phaedra, I think you should just go with like someone like completely like a buffoon that just like makes your life easier and like completes the trio of like game bot, buffoon, and then like the queen. So I think you gotta go with like someone like Burgi if you're Phaedra.
That would have been an interesting decision.
Could you imagine Burgi, that trio?
Burgi would have, you know, he said earlier, and Burgi's probably the nicest person in this whole cast. He's definitely, and I think he said he's like not a traitorous bone in my body. People were already, you know, pegging him as someone that is just looks nervous. So I think if he was a traitor, it definitely like adds a shield for the traitors to kind of, you know, hide behind. But Ensikan, do you agree with Parvati as the third traitor? Would you have picked someone else maybe?
I do think they made a good choice with Parvati. I don't think I personally would have picked her, but I do think that's a really smart choice.
Yeah, I think the people that they were considering on their short list were people that were in reality TV. So that would be Janelle, it was Sandra, it was Parvati, and I forget the fourth one off the top of my head. Was it Larsa? It was Larsa, I think, right?
Yeah, no, it was Larsa.
Yeah. So those four were kind of the people that they were deciding between. Wyatt, if you didn't pick Parvati, do you pick one of those three? Do you pick someone else?
No, I really think that the best person would have been Deontay. I think that he's somebody that, like, the jury's out on him in terms of how good he would be at being a traitor or not. If he's bad, then you kind of get what Dan was saying with the idea of maybe doing somebody like a Parvati who, like, potentially could be the first person out because the heat's already on them. And if he's great, then nobody's going to suspect him. He's going to be good in challenges as well, so there's no possibility of him potentially getting banished. And I think that he's probably one of the more moldable people. Like, I think he's somebody that Dan could take under his wing. I believe Dan is like a boxing fan as well, so I'm sure he could gain that trust. You know, it does seem, I know their statures are significantly different, but it does give me a lot of like Ian Terry potential vibes in terms of him being able to really guide Deontay. I think that's what you want. I think the problem with Parvati, right, and I guess we'll see as the season plays out, is at some point in time, the trainers will turn on each other. And, like, it's like, do you want to go head-to-head in strategic combat with Parvati, or do you want to go strategically head-to-head with, like, you know, Kevin from Bling Empire or somebody like that, right? You want to have somebody that you think you can beat. And I think that's going to be a little bit harder to take out Parvati if you give her enough time to actually be able to ingratiate herself with the group. If you're going to go with somebody that's, like, one of these reality TV powerhouses because you want to, you know, put two good minds together, you probably got to go with Janelle. I think just because you are so close to her, she's probably the most likely that's able to see through your bullshit because she, you know, was fooled by it before. Or even somebody like Sandra or Bananas, who, like, has such an off-putting personality at times that they may go home, even if they're not a traitor, even if they're just such an asshole, they may end up being booted out. So I really think that Parvati was, like, honestly, like, one of the worst picks they could have done.
I'm going to throw out another name that we haven't mentioned as a potential traitor. I think Marcus would have been a really interesting pick for them. You know, they talk a little bit about how they feel like Marcus could weed them out eventually. But I also feel like with Marcus, you can, like, he comes in with an ally already in Larsa. And Larsa's such an outspoken person. Like, you could possibly, like, pin it on. Like, you can really use Marcus the way, like, any way you want. You can, like, kind of pin him as a traitor and kind of get some heat off of you as a traitor by voting him out. But you also gain, like, a certain sector of the cast that will have your back. Like, for Dan, like, eventually we know Parvati, Sandra, Janelle, all of those CBS reality folk are going to eventually target each other just because that's their background. But at the moment, they're aligned. And I do think what Wyatt is saying, there is some credence to it, where you don't necessarily want to go against those people in the end by giving them the inside track as a traitor. And then with Phaedra, she has the housewives corner as well. And she's friends with a lot of the women. Marcus can kind of have some of the people that are not necessarily in either of those two groups, not just Larsa, but, you know, people like Deontay, people like, you know, Kevin and Pete, those guys that could maybe, you know, and you can kind of divide and conquer from there. That would have been an interesting choice. My personal preference, I would have loved if Ekansu was up there in Traitor Tower. I hope she eventually finds her way up there at some point, but that's a story for another day. Ultimately, they are going to choose Parvati, and they also have to choose someone to banish. Now, Parvati's not part of this decision, but they have to choose someone, to murder. And their options that they weed it down to are Kevin, just because it's a random, you know, choice. Johnny Bananas, because Dan looks at him as someone that can be a threat to their game long term. And then Peppermint, someone that's also kind of a wild card in the game. But also, there's a moment at the end of the first episode where Trishel and Peppermint are having, like, a small conversation about, you know, who's a traitor and who's not. And Trishel jokes that if she's murdered, that Peppermint will be the traitor. And Peppermint didn't take it as a joke and was more kind of confused by it. And then Trishel was a little miffed about Peppermint's reaction to her joke. And that kind of starts a bit of a moment there. Naveed, I'll go to you with this one. Trishel versus Peppermint. What do you think about it?
Oh, it was so good. It was so good, especially when Peppermint made the slip up of saying, like, something like a traitor or something like that. That was, like, amazing. And, you know, I'm surprised that Trishel didn't get more blowback from this whole entire, like, from this whole entire dispute and, like, the fact that Peppermint was, like, faithful and all that. Like, it was a bit shocking.
So you're Team Peppermint?
I'm always Team Peppermint. I'm always Team Entertainment.
Wonderful. Insecan, go to you with the same question. Team Peppermint or Team Trishel?
And I've never been a Trishel stan, so by default, I'm Team Peppermint. I found that whole thing just perplexing, like why it was blown out of proportion. And poor Peppermint did set herself up a little bit towards the end there, especially, like, we're going to get to it. But, like, I really thought Trishel was going to get more like blowback from this, like you said, and she didn't, and I'm annoyed because I'm like, why isn't she getting more blowback? I'm hoping that in time people will look at Trishel again. But yeah, no, that whole thing was way so, it was way too unnecessary. Peppermint is better.
Wyatt. I loved the argument. I think it was completely blown out of proportion. But you know what? Almost all of these Traitor episodes are, when you're trying to, like, point at somebody. I'm just surprised. I mean, this was, like, a room full of people. And I think just from watching it on the screen, it was clear that, like, Peppermint wasn't really, like, offended. She was just, like, gasp, you know, type thing. And I'm just surprised that nobody really came to Peppermint's defense. And this really spiraled into what I think was, like, just ridiculous.
Well, the thing about early moments in any show, you know, any moment, usually the first person to kind of make a sudden movement gets called out. And this was the most, you know, beyond the Traitor selection ceremony, this was the first time where someone had really poked their head out. And Trishel kind of ran with it and people, you know, hopped on because, hey, as long as it ain't me kind of thing. And that's kind of, I think, what happened here is that people saw that Peppermint was being targeted. They didn't necessarily care if she was a traitor or faithful, and they kind of jumped on it. That's what I read out of it. And this kind of goes into the next day as well. Naveed kind of alluded to it earlier about how she was trying to defend herself and she slipped up. But going back to breakfast, it's revealed that Bananas is going to be the first one murdered in the whole show. Last place for Bananas, just like he was on Fresh Meat, Wyatt.
Yeah. It, listen, I'm not going to say it's
the
not
duel.
Funny.
The duel.
The duel. Thank you.
But, he comes off, you know, pretty good seasons on Challenge USA, pretty good season on House of Villains. Absolutely shits the bed here. And listen, it was funny. But I just cannot get my head around this. I just don't think this is a good move for Dan. If you're that scared of Bananas, then, like, why did you not potentially even discuss him potentially being a recruit? You know, if you're scared of somebody, you know, bringing them in may be the best way to do it. And like, I just think if you're Dan, like, because of your track record on Big Brother, and just the fact that you were on Big Brother, let alone your track record, I just feel like a lot of people should be pointing fingers at you in the same way they should be pointing fingers at Sandra and Parvati and Bananas. And I just feel like, why are you, like, taking out the people that could, like, knock that out? I think if I was on the cast, I said, okay, at least one reality TV legend, quote unquote legend, you know, using that term loosely, is going to be there. And, you know, you take out Bananas, you're getting closer and closer to Dan, and even closer now that you have Parvati in the mix as well.
Naveed, do you agree with the decision to take Bananas out night one?
It's tough, you know. I think the better play would have been to take out, like, I was going to say CT, but he has a shield, so damn, never mind. Yeah, in that case, I 100% agree that, like, Bananas is the best way to go, because, look, at the end of the day, right, he's obnoxious, he might rile you up, and as much as, like, Dan says that he has, like, the patience of a saint and all that stuff, so far, as far as we've seen when it comes to the challenge and across every other show, no one has been able to avoid getting frustrated or getting annoyed by Bananas when he does his antics. So I think if you're a Dan in that situation, you got to take the shot at Bananas. Plus, I heard this on the Bananas podcast and stuff like that, but Bananas' theory is that Dan was scared of the screen time that he was taking away from him. So that's why Dan was, like, threatened by all that, and that's why he took a shot at Bananas. Well, what do you think about that, Ensikan?
Johnny and Bananas needs to shut the fuck up. I don't really know how else to say this. Johnny and Bananas needs to shut all the way the fuck up. Because what? No, let's just be really clear and honest here. Bananas is into himself. We know this already. This is nothing new. So, of course, he would say some dumb shit like that. Do I think this was Dan's best move? Honestly, no, but I find it funny as hell that Johnny Bananas got first boot in Traitors and has been pissed off ever since. It brings me to life, truly. However, I really don't think this was the best first murder, solely because I feel like there are other people out there who could and should have probably been murdered, who aren't going to be as big, you know, targets as Dan. Like, someone like a Peter... would have been
Kevin was one of those shortlists. I think Kevin would have been a better murder.
I think Kevin would have been better. I think Peter would have been a good option. Dan is just, I mean, just taking out Johnny Bananas, like I said, I find it funny as hell because Bananas eating humble pie every so often is wonderful, but I really don't think it was the best choice.
The optimal move in the Traitors is to kill people that cannot be voted out of the round table. Like, they are either proven to be innocent through, like, some means or something like that, or they just have such a great stranglehold on the people in the game that they're not going to be ousted, because you want to keep those people in. And Bananas is somebody that not only has a track record that you can pit against him, but he also has, like Naveed said, like, people, he gets under people's skin. That's going to happen on this show as well if you lead him in. That's the way that he can end up going out. It's just like Bananas could have been ousted, like, pretty much any round table potentially, but there are people here, as Inskan was mentioned, it's like, dude, if you're like Kevin, Peter, like MJ, like, off the top of my head, there's nothing that you can point to. You're going to have to find something in the game to be able to rely on them if you need them out. But with Bananas, like, you could just turn his track record on him, and I think that's why it's so important to leave people like that in the game.
Yeah, and you start to see a little bit as well in the second round table that we'll talk to when it comes up, but we see that, you know, people are looking at the men, and Dan is one of the prime options. And I do think that if Bananas was there, he could possibly be an option before Dan. So, Naveed, you were saying?
No, just I just want to add one more thing to the Dan and Bananas thing. Bananas tweeted out, yo, add Dan, he's like, your mom's a hoe. So.
Now, Ensign, I want to come to you with this. You know, Phaedra didn't get a whole lot of screen time, I guess, in terms of the confessionals describing, you know, what the thought process behind the decision. But what do you think about Bananas getting murdered for Phaedra's game?
I think it's perfect. For Phaedra, this is great. Johnny Bananas doesn't serve Phaedra in any sense, in any sort of way. Phaedra, Johnny Bananas isn't going to do anything for Phaedra. In fact, if Johnny Bananas sticks around long enough, he might say Phaedra's name randomly one day, because Johnny Bananas just randomly says names sometimes. I think this is great for Phaedra. This makes more sense for Phaedra than it does for Dan, and I find that funny because Dan's the one who led the charge on this. The more men that go, because Phaedra tends to do better with the women anyway, so she should want to keep women in. So I really don't see a point in, you know, her targeting a woman. So this is great. The more men that go, the more people are going to look at Dan than her, the better it is, and the more friends she has.
Yeah. I think Phaedra has played it really well. I think that, you know, she really is kind of letting Dan make the decisions and letting him trip up. And I think that Phaedra is going to be – I think Phaedra could go pretty far. I really have a hard time seeing how people are going to, you know, point at her. At least if she as long as she continues the way that she's playing. But going into Beyond Breakfast, the celebrities, they're going to get a questionnaire to fill out before the second mission. And the questionnaire is three questions. The first question, it being, whose opinion does everyone value the most? People are going to say Marcus. And the second question is, who is the most popular player? And Peppermint is going to be the answer to that question. And then the last question, who needs to speak up more? And people are going to say Dan. Three very interesting questions. Wyatt, what were your thoughts on these questions coming up this early in the game?
I hated this game. I hated it on the Traitors UK. I think this was episode 3 for UK, 2 for US. I just think that you really throw a lot of people under the bus here early. And listen, this really should have been a sign for Dan to speak up more. He shouldn't have, you know, waited as long as he did to be able to do that. But I'm just not a fan. You got a million different games you can play. I'm not a fan of this. And it was boring as fuck, too. It's like, OK, you're going to carry a fucking scarecrow. Whoopty fucking do.
Yeah, again, I feel like the missions, they recognized from season 1 that they do need to do something different with the mission. And I think they recognize that, but I still think they need to go back to the drawing board for any future seasons in terms of, you know, what they're going to do for these missions. But Naveed, you were saying?
on top of like what Wyatt was saying, I just think it gives an even more like unfair advantage to the traders. If you think about it, like when it came to just the initial fact of like there's only two when they could pick their third, this was before they could, you know, they picked Parvati. Is that correct? Or was this after?
This was after.
Okay, but either way, whatever the situation is, I just think that like the fact that they can already pick who they want to pick, but then after that gets such like valuable information as to like who they can murder at night to, you know, cause the most damage to the faithful side. I just think it's really, really like unfair to like the faithful. And it just like it's just not fun, you know. Like I personally would have enjoyed to see. I personally would have enjoyed if Marcus stayed in the game much longer. And I think this is like one of the nails in his coffin, or like one of the reasons why he went home.
Yeah, we'll talk about that murder a little bit later on. But in the mission, they get 16 grand out of a possible 20,000, and Dan is going to be the one with the shield. Obviously, a moot point, considering Dan was never going to be murdered to begin with. Maybe this gives him some protection if he's going for a shield, then maybe he's not seen as like a traitor. But I feel like it really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of everything. Back at the deliberation ahead of the first round table, there's going to be talk between like Peppermint trying to defend herself, because obviously there's a lot of attention on her from what happened with Trishel at breakfast and then what happened the day before. And she eventually, you know, misspeaks and calls herself a traitor instead of a faithful. Ensikan, what were your thoughts about this whole scene with Peppermint?
It was in that moment that I knew Peppermint would, in fact, be banished. She already had an uphill battle against her, but that right there, there's no coming back from that. Calling yourself a traitor, there's no defense you could possibly have that's going to make people think we shouldn't vote you out. It's really a nail in the coffin situation that she was done in that moment. And it was kind of just sad to watch because, you know, she didn't really get much of a chance to defend herself, and no one really came to her defense. So, like, she was just screwed all around. But that right there, that's – you can't be making those kind of slip-ups in the games called the traitors. It's just – it's game over.
Yeah, and at the round table, it's really going to be kind of a dogpile on Peppermint, except for Max. Wyatt, Max is going to be really the only person – that comes to Peppermint's defense and really challenges what's happening.
Well, I think he understands that, like, everything that they're pinning on Peppermint actually has, like, a logical reason behind it. It's like people mess up their words. You know, they say the wrong thing. Listen to me in this podcast, and I've done it 10 times already, right? So, like, it can happen. And I think he realized that, like, that's probably what we shouldn't be basing it on. The truth of the matter is like, what else can you do? I kind of think the only other person that you could really pin it on in this roundtable would be Trishel. If you think Trishel was blowing this whole argument with Peppermint out of proportion, then maybe I would look at her. But because Peppermint did have this 40 and slip as well, it is kind of hard to defend her, even if you think that she's not a traitor.
Yeah, if I'm at this round table, I hide in the majority, vote Peppermint, and just move on. I really, even if I think Peppermint's faithful, honestly, like, when I see someone, like, slip up and say they're a traitor, to me, that's just bad faithful behavior. And maybe that's just because I've you know, watched a couple seasons of The Traitors now to know that, like, you know, a traitor's not going to say they're a traitor. Like, we've never seen someone do that before. So I just think that would be just bad, faithful behavior. And in the round table, you know, John does get some heat for his opening, you know, I'm asthmatic kind of deal at the traitor ceremony to begin the game. But it's not going to be enough. He's only going to get two votes, one from Max and then one from MJ, who kind of throws John's name out there just because she knows Peppermint's going to go, but she wants people to get John in their head. And I think that's a decent play. And then Peppermint's also going to vote for Trishel just because she's put her in this position almost single-handedly, and Peppermint's going to be banished with 17 votes. And of course, she's going to reveal that she is a faithful. And people are mad about this. People are not happy in Sakant that Peppermint is a as a faithful, particularly Sheree. Sheree, you know, we haven't heard a lot from Sheree up until this point, but she's going to voice her opinion and say this is kind of bullshit that we just voted Peppermint out just because.
I mean, I get that they were upset they voted out a faithful. Like, that's not a good feeling. But on the same note, what did they expect? I'm kind of confused. There's like, what, 20 people in the game at this point? Three traders, your chances of hitting a trader is incredibly low. Like, by default, you're probably going to vote a faithful. So, like, you don't have a lot to base your vote off of. And like you said, really, the best move here is just to hide with the majority and just vote Peppermint. So I don't know why people are, like, going around feeling guilty and crap. Like, you didn't have options. Because if you throw your vote, people remember that, and they're going to use that against you at some point.
Yeah. And, you know, the game just moves on without Peppermint. But we're going to go to Trader's Tower. For the first time, Parvati is going to meet her fellow traders. She knew that she was recruited, but she didn't know who recruited her until the second Trader's Tower meeting between her, Dan, and Phaedra. And the three of them together just seems like a really strong combination, at least at the beginning of the game. And they're going to decide who to murder as a threesome for the first time. And it's between Marcus, Deontay, Larsa, and Janelle. But I'm going to go at it again with you guys, just like you did, just like we did for the first time. Do you murder Marcus here, or do you go for someone else in the shortlist, or do you think someone else should have been considered? Wyatt, we'll start with you.
I think Marcus was the best option. The only thing that worried me, and I don't remember who it was, but when Marcus is having this conversation with Dan, he's saying, hey, you really need to speak up more. You know, why weren't you speaking up at that round table? I didn't hear you. I forgot who else was in that room with them two. But I would be afraid that if I kill Marcus, it's like, okay, well, then if, like, I don't know who it was, but let's just say Kevin is like, hey, Dan, you know, Marcus was telling Dan about his reservations and now he's dead. That's what would scare me. I do think it's the best person to do. It's just, I think if I was Dan, I would be apprehensive for that reason. Now, obviously, there's a million conversations out there and they only show us a few, but that's what I would have thought. So I probably would have steered in a different direction because of that, but I do think that Marcus is the best thing for them to be able to do. It was just risky.
Yeah, it was a big risk. Big risk for sure. Naveed, does it pay off, you think?
Yeah, especially after you think, like, that challenge where everyone was like, he's the most trustworthy or whatever the fuck the answer was. You just got to think that Marcus is, like, 100% the person who has to go. And to Wyatt's point about, like, the conversation between him and Dan, you got to imagine Dan is probably getting, like, told to speak up more, but probably more than just Marcus. Like, this is just probably one conversation that we're getting insight into when it comes to, like, people just giving him a heads up. I can only imagine Pedro or, like, you know, what's it called? Parvati themselves being like, Dan, like, you know, like, people are saying that you need to speak up more. Like, so it's probably just a scene that was shown to us to kind of make us to make it make sense as to why you know, he was targeted, but I imagine it wasn't probably like a big factor as to like or something that like Dan was necessarily like worrying about.
Yeah. Andrew, Ensikan, we have like a pattern here now with Marcus being the second person murdered. We start to see like men coming in as a potential, like they're scared of, you know, men in the game. Do you think it was smart to like kind of stay on that path because Marcus, you know, is someone that could have possibly, you know, sniffed him out just like Bananas was. But do you think like going on for like the same reasoning, two murders in a row is a smart strategy?
I'm going to say this. I don't know if murdering two men was a strategy or not. I would have been very concerned about murdering Marcus for the sole fact that he has a girlfriend in the house who is vindictive from what I've seen of her in the past, who will stay on someone's behind the entire time until she gets what she wants. Like, and we saw her start to go for Dan almost instantly, and I don't see her hopping off of Dan anytime soon. And, you know, her and Larsa and MJ kind of called this. Men are being murdered. I think a man is doing this. And they picked the most logical man. It's Dan. Like, CT isn't going to be the one you call out for that. Like, he took a shield the first round because he was terrified.
And CT wasn't going to murder Bananas night one.
And CT wasn't going to murder Bananas night one, which is something Dan should have also thought about. And then, like, no one's really going to point to Kevin or Peter. And Berkey turned bright red just for being nervous. So, like, the fact that he's not bright red right now means it's probably not him. So that left Dan.
Yeah, Dan is running out of room to hide, and I don't think he necessarily had that in mind. And now that Marcus is gone, he's definitely catching a little bit more heat for his decision. We're going to go to the next mission, which takes place at night. And really, this is like Bergie's moment to shine. You know, we haven't heard a whole lot of Bergie yet, but he is really like the star of the mission. He collects most of the money for the team in this mission. The group gets $19,500 in the mission, and Bergie's a big reason why. The shields are gonna go to Peter, Tamara, and Janelle, who has like a bit of a squabble, I would call it, with Ekansu in trying to get that final shield. Ekansu wanted the shield, but it seemed like Janelle grabbed it right before Ekansu got there, and Ekansu tried to, you know, jerk it back from her. It was a bit of a cat fight between the two, and it's creating like a pretty interesting rivalry between the two. What do you think? Are you team Ekansu or are you team Janelle, Wyatt?
Oh, I'm team Ekansu. I've never been a Janelle fan. Listen, I acknowledge that she's a legend and everything, and I was excited to see her on the show, but, you know, I've never been somebody that's going to root for her work, like Ekansu. Like, I will root for her until the day I die.
Wonderful. I'm team both of them, which is making this really difficult for me, but... Fan
sitter!
Naveed, Ekansu or Janelle, who's in the right here?
You know, I was team Janelle all the way back in Big Brother 7 when Janelle, like, wrestled James. I am team Janelle in this situation as well.
Do you think, it's a can that Ekansu is in the right here? Or is Ekansu kind of making this into nothing?
I mean, I watched the scene. I had to go back and rewind it. Janelle got it first, and Ekansu kind of tried to get it back, like, Janelle's not wrong here. The only thing that happened that's going to be a problem is this isn't going to play out favorably for Janelle, even though she's right. People are going to use anything they can to paint a narrative against you, and this is going to be just one of those things that they're going to use to paint a narrative against Janelle. But Janelle was right.
Yeah, because this is Janelle's second shield in three missions when most people haven't even gotten one. So people are going to continue this narrative of Janelle being selfish against her. And that could bite her in the butt down the line. But it hasn't yet. But again, we'll have to just wait and see see how this Ekansu Janelle storyline kind of evolves. I think it could last a couple episodes, and we could see several different iterations of how it could go down. But you know, Ekansu is gonna get some flack for this, and there's gonna be some discussion about her possibly being a traitor. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of heat on Dan, and that you know, catches wind with Parvati. And Parvati, obviously being the newest traitor, wants to keep Dan in the game because she feels like Dan will be a shield for her long term. And I mean, what do you guys think about Dan catching this heat and Parvati defending her, Naveed? Is this the right move for Parvati's game to defend Dan, or should she just let this Dan heat, you know, burn him?
I mean, it's like really like it's because it, like it's one of those things where the longer Dan stays in the game, theoretically, with the way we've seen with his Big Brother experience, like, he becomes just more and more dangerous, right? Where he like builds trust, like these really good relationships, and people just for whatever reason they get blinded by the Dan mist. So it's just one of those things where like she may want to keep him around as a shield, but I'm of like the feeling that you should just let him go now, like to take like, you know, let it happen early on versus like later, versus where it would be like really tough.
Yeah, Ensican. So we're going to see some heat with Dan here. We're also going to see some heat with Max. And that's mainly from Deontay. Deontay feels like Max is acting a little bit different than he did on day one. Do you think Deontay is justified in thinking this? Or is he just trying to create something out of nothing?
I mean, I think Deontay felt like Max was acting differently since day one. But, I mean, Max from day one, from what we saw from the first episode, has been walking in and out of rooms, has been not very forthcoming with what he's thinking, a bit reserved, a bit to himself, not as polished with his words. We've seen the same Max the entire time. I don't really think he's changed. I do think Deontay may have felt like he felt a change, and I don't fault him for that, but like I do think it was a bit, his reading was a bit off.
Yeah, something I want to add about Deontay that I want to talk about with you, Wyatt. You know, we saw this after the peppermint banishment, and we also see it after the second banishment as well, where Deontay is like visibly emotional about these decisions, because in this game, you know, there's a lot of, we'll call it gaslighting for lack of a better term, where people feel like they are being accused of something and then they have to defend themselves, and it's really hard to defend themselves. And ultimately, like, they were right in how they felt. They banished a faithful in peppermint. They banished a faithful again. So like, what do you think about like Deontay's emotions in these, after these roundtables?
He's such a weirdo. Like, he's such a weirdo. It's like, here's the thing. Is like, if you're listening to this and you're not a boxing fan, you may not understand this. But Deontay Wilder makes $10 million every time he fights. And he fought a couple weeks ago. He fought a couple days before Christmas. So he had a fight probably lined up while he was in the house. It's just like, dude, like, why are you even here competing for $250,000? First and foremost, what made you do this? And second of all, for you to get so emotional, I guess it really does show that he's like not as much of a bad guy, because in the boxing community, he's been viewed as like a very bad person, because he said at press conference that, like, you know, he doesn't really care if he kills his opponent in the ring, like that's not his problem. So he kind of comes off as a little bit of like a hard ass and a little bit of an asshole. And this is definitely a different side of him. And I wonder, is this a PR campaign? Is this a PR campaign that maybe he's you know, a little Deloitte or
maybe
McKinney,
so.
Or
maybe
like, hey, like,
way, this is an opportunity for people to see a new side of him,
because he's on his way out as a boxer at this point. Like, he had a really nasty loss in December against a guy that he should not have lost to, probably because he was in this
maybe
fucking
he was,
show
maybe
doing
he spent
this
too much game. Time in the trader's house.
Yeah, it's
well.
Like, it's like when you have to go and train for boxing for 8 days, and the person that is going to train you is like, who, like fucking John Bercow? It's like, I don't know how you're going to do it. I really think this might be an act from Deontay, which would make sense of why he should have been a trainer in the first place if this is an act.
I don't know. Those tears looked very real. And the thing with Deontay is he's really helping Dan out, because this diversion of Max, Dan's going to kind of hop on it, and a lot of people are going to hop on it as well. And it really gives, even though people are still on Dan, namely MJ and MJ and Larsa, you know, most of the people are going to hop on this Max train, because Max just doesn't really know how to defend himself. At least with Dan, he's been able to defend himself before. He has the experience of it, and he's put together a pretty decent defense. I just don't know how long he's going to have. I don't know how long he's going to be able to hold it up as this like quiet guy. And you know, that's just his personality, and you know, that's why I'm, you know, like, that's not why I'm a traitor. Like, he doesn't really say he's not a traitor. He's just like, you're accusing me of being a traitor because I'm quiet. But that's just me. Like, that shouldn't be the reason, you know, if you're going to call me out as a traitor, make it a good reason, not because of, I'm just me, you know? So ultimately Max is going to get some votes here. Majority of the votes, he's going to get 10 votes here. From Bergie, CT, Dan, Deontay, Ekinsu, Janelle. John Bercow's also going to vote for him. We're also going to get Max votes from Sandra, who also has a pretty decent argument against Max here. And people are going to listen on to it. I think Bergie says that he really values Sandra's opinion. And I do think that Bergie and Sandra are going to be two of the longest faithfuls. I think they're going to be one of the last people vanished, if I really think about it. But We're also going to see Tamara and Trishelle vote for Max, but we're also going to see some hinky votes here, some votes that are against the status quo. Obviously, Larsa and MJ are going to vote for Dan. If Phaedra and Max are going to vote for Ekansu based on the mission and, you know, adding a target on their back for no reason. That's an interesting move from Phaedra there as well to vote Ekansu. But another move that I wanted to talk about was Parvati and her decision to vote for Kevin. And she, I don't know if y'all caught this, but she wrote a D on her slate and kind of scribbled it off and then wrote Kevin. And Kevin's been a really, you know, under the radar, you know, player at this point. Naveed, what were your thoughts about any of these votes, but mainly, you know, this Parvati vote for Kevin and the scribbled D?
It's really smart, you know, because especially when it comes to traders, everyone's looking for like the smallest thing to go off of. And if people now see that like Parvati like wrote D and was like contemplating it, maybe moving forward, they might include her into like plans to like, you know, banish Dan. So like, and that'll just like help the traders as a whole. So I thought this was like a really, really like a savvy move by Parvati.
Definitely a move from a veteran here, Ensikan.
I don't like this move.
I disagree. I don't like it at all.
Okay.
Why?
Say why, yeah.
Why, yeah, you can go first.
Yeah, so the reason why I don't particularly care for it is what's going to happen with this, right, is like, did she tell Dan that she was going to do this? If the answer is no, then Dan, in his paranoid mind, is probably not going to believe her at face value if she tells him in Traitor Tower, Trailer Tuck Tuck, Trailer, whatever they're going to call
Traitor
it.
Tower.
Like, that could potentially cause a divide between Dan and Parvati. And if she has not, if she has told him, so even if we're assuming that she is going to tell us, I think that people are going to think that this is a little bit too coy from her. It's like, okay, well, Parvati's somebody who's so, you know, so well into Survivor that she's going to know what she's going to do ahead of time. And she's not going to sit here and do a scribble out. You know, she would erase it or do something. I think it's somebody like Sandra, who's going to be so on Parvati's ass this entire time. I think that's something that she could potentially pick up on. And I really think there's a good chance that when we get into episode 4, that we're going to see the gears start to turn for somebody. I don't know if it'll be public. I don't know if it'll be a roundtable conversation, but somebody is definitely going to be starting to put together the pieces of Dan and Parvati.
And I would also like to point out that the move would have been better had she just voted Dan. Like, if you're going to do a scribble, you might as well just write his name down and call it a day, honestly speaking. And, like, just say, like,
hey.
What
if the D was for Deontay?
The D would not be for Deontay. That would be... Then she might as well should have voted for Deontay then. So she either should have just voted for Deontay, voted for Dan. Like, the Kevin vote is so random and makes no sense. Either you vote for Dan and you say, like, hey, you've been really quiet. Like, I don't get it. You vote for Deontay and say, hey, like, you kind of set yourself up. Or, you know, I don't know. Just the scribble out D is really, it's too out there. It's too much of a bait and switch for someone to believe that Parvati would do that.
So you guys think it's too cute? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. I think she should have just voted for Dan.
I don't think it's going to play that much of a factor. I don't think people are necessarily going to look at Parvati and think, oh, that's sus. I just don't think they're on the same level. And the thing with Parvati and Dan, you know, they won their shows within, you know, within a few months of each other back in 2008. So they've known each other, like, they've known of each other. I imagine that they've had interactions, you know, since then, maybe not necessarily in person, but there's a respect there for over 15 years. And I do think that I do think Dan knew of the plan. You know, we'll see how far it goes. But ironically enough, this isn't the only Kevin vote that was in at the round table. Kevin and Peter, out of nowhere, really the only value either of them added in the first three episodes, they vote for each other. And Peter kind of explains this as like a move of his, as, you know, we need to kind of create diversion between us so that people will kind of pile on us and then we can kind of turn it back on them. Naveed, do you agree with this plan from Peter and Kevin?
And speaking of moves that are too cute, this is like the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. So like I don't know like what these guys are thinking. Like it's just like I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of it. Were you, Wyatt?
No, I think the idea is fine. Where it's like, hey, like if all of our attention is at each other, then the traitors are not going to think that we're on to them. And if we're not on to them, then we're not going to get voted out. However, the problem is if you go too far with this, and we'll see how that transcends. But if they go too far with this, the round table will literally be Kevin versus Spear. And that's where you don't want to be. But the idea of like, hey, let's argue so we don't get killed, I think is probably okay. And if they keep this up and they're not like super gung-ho about it, I think it might work.
And Sakan, what are your thoughts?
I think they forgot the argue part of the plan. Because all they did was write each other's names down and then be like, I'm suspicious of you. What? Yeah. They said nothing the entire roundtable. At least, like, throw each other's names out there during the roundtable. Because everyone was shocked that they voted for each other. Like, it really is going to get people talking. And I don't think it's going to get people talking in the way they think it is.
Yeah, I could totally see the next round table being Kevin versus Peter. I really could. That could be a really, like, again, the idea is there, and I do credit Peter for that. But I do think that Kevin could be a really easy target for the next banishment now, because it just, you know, the eyes are obviously on the guys now with Max going home, you know, and it does seem like a woman is going to be the next person murdered. So it will be even more on the guys. And I think that, you know, it already, unless something new, you know, develops, you know, in the next episode, I do think that Kevin and Peter could be targets. If they can turn it around and flip it on someone, then cool. But I think what's going to happen is anyone who jumps on this Kevin Peter stuff, that's who Peter and Kevin are going to flip it on. And it's just going to create a massive hubbubba, or, you know, brouhaha is what we'll call it. It could be interesting, but I'm sure we'll talk about it as the future goes on. There wasn't like, I feel like they had to show that scene because it explained their votes. But I do think there is more legs to the storyline, but, running a little short on time, but I do want to discuss the poison chalice, which is a very interesting new development on the show. I don't think we've seen it. We didn't see it up until this point in the UK season. But we do see it here at the end of episode 3, where Dan, Parvati, and Phaedra, they're not going to meet in Traitor's Tower. Instead, they're going to be pulled aside by producers. I'm not sure if this happened before or after the roundtable, but they are basically going to be told, hey, this is how the next murder is going to go. You have to make someone drink out of this, you know, shitty glass. and they have to go through, like, the library and they have to like pick, they have to find the chalice that's in a book. And then they have to get the chalice that's never been seen before, pour some drink in it and give it to the next person. Whoever drinks that will be murdered. And again, Insekan, we see Phaedra kind of take a step back here and really not be part of the decision up until the glass nears her friend Sheree. What were your thoughts on Phaedra's role in all of this?
I think the less Phaedra, I think Phaedra knows this is a public move and it's at some point going to be brought up. And I think Phaedra is playing it right. Like, if you are Phaedra and you are a traitor, the less public you are, the better. And her moving to save Sheree in like the most discreet way possible was also really like, you know, I'm not going to make a decision, but you're also not going to murder my friends.
Yeah, I think that was smart on her behalf to kind of, because really, I think for the most part, you know, Phaedra, it doesn't really matter who gets murdered for her. I think she's going to be okay regardless. But Sheree is obviously a number in her corner that she's trying to keep. But Naveed, what do you think here about this whole situation between Dan, Parvati, Phaedra, and the public murder in plain sight?
You don't like like Andrew, it's like Ensukan said, it's really smart because Pedro was legitimately just like drawing boundaries, right? Saying like, listen, you know what, I'm down to kind of like go with whatever you guys say for like the votes, but fuck you if you think I'm just gonna roll over and let you kill whoever you want, especially when it comes to like this chalice twist. I thought this twist was pretty fun. It's gonna be exciting to see like how poverty actually gets someone. I just wish that they really gave the traders some like easier like hardware to work with, because my god, I think like even if I was like down to like drink something, I would look at that cup and go like, you know, I'll pass on this one, poverty. You know.
Fair enough. Wyatt, do you think that Parvati is playing this well? Because it seems like she's the one that's taking the lead on this one.
Yeah, she probably is the person that needs to be the one. You know, she is like the Black Widow, as they like to cram down our throats. I do think she's the one that's most likely to get somebody to drink out of that cup. Because it's like, listen, like, are you going to give it to the housewife? Like, the housewife, you know, all these people, like, they're relatively wealthy as well. You think they're going to drink out of that, you know, Goodwill cup? I don't think so. And Dan's not convincing me to do any of that. Like, Parvati would probably be the person that's the best bet. So I think it's a good choice for them. I'm just like, I do want to float this theory out there. Is it possible that Parvati doesn't get anybody to drink the cup and there's just no murder?
So I did read a little bit more about it. It does seem, and I think Parvati was in an interview or something. She said that someone does get murdered, but it's not who we think it is.
Because my gut instinct, like, I have a gut instinct of who I thought would drink it. But in terms of like, would she be able to get anybody to drink the cup? I don't know. I just felt like they cut it at a point where I don't know where to go, like, other than just a bold assumption.
Well, what happens if no one drinks the cup? No one gets murdered?
And yeah, just I think it's what probably happens is like, they're at breakfast, everybody shows up, and then, you know, Lola comes, you know, prancing in there, and he says, hey, one of you was supposed to be poisoned last night, but the traitors didn't do their job. So for that reason, there was no murder. And then, you know, it's like, get ready for the challenge. That's what I think it would be.
But that doesn't everyone else go like Parvati, isn't that weird? Like, you were offering drinks to everyone.
Exactly. I think that would be kind of like the issue. And I think that's probably going to be the issue regardless, right? Because people are going to see her with this weird cup in her hand, comparison to the other cups. And I just feel like, what else would you do? I mean, granted, if I played the game, I wouldn't be thinking about like, quote unquote, being poisoned. I would think that it would be some type of Among Us thing where somebody gets fucking stabbed in the back or something. So I don't even know if my mind would go to like a poison thing. So I would even be spooked by the cup. But I do think that we'll have some people pointing accusations based on something that they picked up on the night before.
If someone gets spooked by the cup, I will be very impressed. I really think it's something that never really been seen before on the traders. And it just, if someone really, you know, hops onto that, I will be very impressed. I'll be very impressed. But I really hope this isn't where we lose Sandra. I could totally see if like Parvati is going rogue and is making this her decision. I could totally see her give it to Sandra. So I hope that that's not where we lose Sandra here. But I have to worry about the queen here for a sec. But I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun talking about this more in detail as we get into our next episode. We're going to try to get these episodes weekly. You know, they air on Thursday nights on Peacock. We'll hopefully try to get these recorded on Friday and at the absolute latest Saturday, and we'll be giving weekly recaps as the season goes on. They won't be as, you know, we had to try to cram 3 episodes into this one, guys, and I think we did an absolutely traitorous, tremendous job. So thank you to all of you for coming on, and thank you to our listeners who joined us in Traitor's Tower for our first episode. And again, Peacock has new episodes every Thursday night at 9 p.m., so be sure to check that out. And then after you watch that, be sure to come check us out here at Reality Daily. So until next time, don't get murdered.